Welcome to another edition of EduChats, and I'm very pleased to welcome Rebecca Smith as our guest for this episode. Rebecca is a visual arts and IT teacher at Northern Beaches Christian School in New South Wales. How are you, Rebecca?
Very well, thank you, Tim.
Tell us about Northern Beaches Christian School.
Yeah, sure. So we're a school situated in Terry Hills in Sydney. It's a little bit off the beaten track out in the bush area near Duffy's Forest, which is a lovely setting. I get to drive past paddocks in the morning with horses in them and then arrive at a really beautiful state-of-the-art school that's won a lot of awards for its architecture. And we have brand new classrooms for the visual arts and IT department at the moment, which I'm very excited about, with lovely air conditioning for the colder days that are here now.
I have been and I have visited your school on a couple of occasions and very, very impressed with the architecture and the design. And of course, Northern Beaches Christian School has had quite a reputation for innovation over a number of years. So it's lovely to have a chat with you and tell us what you teach and what's involved in your day-to-day activities at the school.
Sure. Well, it's a little bit different after the isolation period for COVID-19. My staff room is my classroom now. I'm keeping myself in this one place. And when I arrive at school, I'll set up the room, making sure that I've got all the different IT working, as I'm sure different teachers can identify. Sometimes there are technical difficulties that you just need to iron out at the beginning of the day. And then, you know, the students come in, they might have laptops, we might be working more practical because as a visual arts teacher, we also do hands-on fine arts, which lends itself really well when teaching things like Photoshop. I can say, okay, instead of using a physical brush today, we're going to be using a mouse and we'll be using the brush tool in Photoshop. Also teaching coding, which has been a new adventure for me. And the students have done exceptionally well in that area. So, yeah, a little bit of visual, a little bit of IT, all put together. And then the end result is wonderful creativity that's coming out of the school here at Northern Beaches.
What a lovely combination of two amazing areas to be teaching. Tell us about you as a teacher. First of all, why did you get involved in education? Tell us a bit about your teacher journey, so to speak.
Sure. Teaching really suits my personality. My public face, I really enjoy speaking with people and finding out little interesting details about their life. I like to sit and have a chat. So it does suit my personality in general. But also as a creative, I do like my downtime. And so isolation has been also really lovely for me to have that quiet, productive time on my own creative projects. So as a teacher, I first thought about the idea of becoming a teacher in year 12. I'm doing visual arts as a student back then and thinking, what on earth am I going to do with my life? Don't ever want to stop doing art. And so I spoke to a couple of my art teachers and said, do you have any regrets about becoming an art teacher? And they said, absolutely not. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give that a go then. And then I applied with the University of New South Wales and got into their course, Bachelor of Art Education, which is at the COFA campus, which is this beautiful little campus in Paddington. And it's the size of a high school, so it's a lot easier to navigate than the big Kensington campus of UNSW. And I absolutely loved all the courses that we went through for that degree. Came out the other end, also added to that a diploma of transpersonal art therapy so I could work with students who have hearing impairment and other disabilities. That's been really lovely for me to be able to add another caveat to connecting with people, as I am that people person. So drawing, and especially for hearing impaired students, their world is so much more visual, and the way that they can communicate with us through art making is wonderful and mind-blowing at the same time.
Tell us about the IT side of things, Rebecca. How did you get involved in teaching coding?
Yes, great question. It was a need that had to be filled, and I was willing, and actually really glad that I did take the opportunity, because I've also taught maths, and so the left-right brain balance for me is really important to keep both of those active, and coding certainly keeps them active for me. And I find coding, and even said it to my class today, I find coding to be a beautiful balance where they're using their math skills and their logical reasoning, but then their output might be really interesting, beautiful artwork, a shape, color, something like that. So it does still fit all the different things that I need to feel like I'm getting satisfaction out of teaching. And I'm passing that passion on, hopefully, to some of my students.
Oh, that's great. Now, Rebecca, how did you manage during the COVID-19 isolation period? Tell us about the technologies that you used, but also give us a clue as to how the school generally managed during that time.
Yeah, sure. So just at the beginning of this year, we started using a new learning management system. And that LMS is called Canvas. And it was very new to everyone. Now we're all experts, because we had to become experts in a very short period of time. And so there was an exponential growth that went on for all teachers at this school during that time. And it held itself well. You know, we were able to keep all students who had good internet connectivity on for the entire hour of each lesson. We could share screens, we had chat rooms, we had conference calling going on. We would set up announcements prior to the lesson so the kids could see what they needed to do that lesson just prior. And the whole learning management system was just getting infiltrated by each teacher. Quick, put all these different resources on, type them up, create them, put them online. Our workload probably tripled during this time. Yeah.
So you more or less kept to the original timetable that the students would be doing face-to-face, but you did it as an online approach.
Correct.
And did you feel that worked well?
It did work well. There were some slight changes, which I think were clever ideas, such as if you've got a lesson that backs straight onto another lesson, just finish that one 5-10 minutes early to give the students and the teachers that quick break between screen time or toilet, quick drink, food, whatever it might be, and then come back and almost reset for the new lesson. That was a good move in the right direction. And there were a few days there where we had prep time and there weren't any classes, just for a few days. So that gave us a little bit of a head start, but it was really flying by the seat of our pants each day as best as we could and really using our creative skills. Yeah.
Absolutely. The kids were... So, Rebecca, how have the teachers coped now that they're back? Do you think there's any skills that they developed that they're going to continue using? And the concept of blended learning has been around for a long time. Do you see it now being a reality for most teachers now that they've experienced what it's like to be teaching online? Or has everything just gone back to where it was before?
It certainly doesn't feel like everything's returned to what it was like before. And that's because we have only just had some staff return who needed to stay at home for various reasons. And I still have some students who are unable to return to school at this time, maybe for medical reasons themselves or someone who they live with in their home. And so we certainly have learnt brand new skills about remote teaching. And those things include how to get our information online really effectively and how to distribute it well so that it's easily found by our students, and then how to communicate with them by adding things like the conference call, like I said before, and the chat room as well. It doesn't feel the same coming back into the school because of those students who I've still got at home. I will have to prepare the lesson in the classroom, and then I'll pop the conference call on for those particular students. They'll be able to see me present to the class and then take down their notes and go on with their work there. I can also chat with them directly and personally using the chat forum. But it is tricky, and I think the students and the teachers have agreed that face-to-face is so much better. It is more personable. A student who has a particular question will probably hold back typing that into a chat forum. But in the classroom, with a teacher who they're really familiar and comfortable with, they'll just be firing those questions at me, and I'll be answering them as best as I can. So the research has suggested that face-to-face is better at times than online, and for certain aspects, and that's the general consensus coming back here as well.
Tell me a sort of a question without notice, I suppose. What about video, and in terms of the general teaching population and their skills with creating videos, did you find that that was something that they were doing or needing to do and actually did during the isolation period?
Yeah, different teachers really took on the videoing, and they were creating small little videos as introductions, if you like, to each lesson. And those teachers might not have had much video training or IT knowledge before then, kind of, again, getting thrown in the deep end and just swimming with whatever worked for them. So that might be their particular personality type that enjoyed using video. But other ways that video teaching maybe can or doesn't work so well is that we don't have, before COVID, we didn't have many different avenues for videoing. So, for example, I was using things like PowerPoint to video my Photoshop work, which seems like a real sort of roundabout way, but our conference call application couldn't do it. And so you had to get creative and figure out other ways around it. It adds a lot more time to our workload as teachers to be creating videos. We then need to edit them to put them up. And of course, ideally you want to be face-to-face, especially when you're doing things like video editing yourself in front of the students, or Photoshop editing, those kinds of things. So there's pros and cons, I think, to everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Rebecca, tell me, were some of the Adobe tools used a little bit more during isolation, say the Spark tools and Rush across the board that you're aware of, or did you find it was still much the same use as before isolation?
So I haven't used Spark this term with my students. I have used Rush to make a couple of videos of my mentor group, and we've put them together with other mentor groups as a TikTok, which has been a really lovely way of coming back to school and still being isolated, but then putting all our videos together and watching that together as a timeline and kind of giggling at each other's groups. So there you have video being used as a way of bringing people together, which is really great. But to answer your question, I had to go with Photoshop. I had to ditch the whole creative clay unit of work that I was doing with Year 8. And they're making little clay junk food, things like, you know, strawberry donuts and ice creams and things. And we were going to put them in a backdrop for the Bondi to Bronte Sculptures by the Sea exhibition. They were halfway through making these clay maquettes when we were told isolate. And so then what do? I had to just go, all right, guys, don't worry about your clay. I'll get the ones that are finished fired while you're away. In the meantime, let's go to Photoshop. And I want you to find these backdrops of Bondi and Bronte. And I want you to go and find another image of the junk food that you were making anyway. And we're going to learn how to superimpose that and then cast a shadow depending on where your light source is coming from. So it looks like it's actually there in the real exhibition. So things like Photoshop have been a lifesaver during this time when the hands-on physical works were here at school. We actually had to mail all the visual arts process diaries out to the kids so they had their books there to work in. And we sent out booklets of work as well. But the Adobe applications came in very, very handy during this time. And because I had already worked with them last year when they were year seven and I'd done my whole year seven Photoshop work with them, they had those skills already built up.
And in terms of computer access for the students, Rebecca, tell me, did all the students have laptops to work with? Is it a one-to-one school?
Yeah, it's actually a BYOD school. So every student has their own device. We probably favour more in the Macs than we do in the various PCs, which is great for, you know, all the different colour variations that you can get for things like Photoshop. And they had those at home, but then you've also got mum and dad at home using the internet. Might get used up, or the internet's really struggling under three, four people all online at the one time. And some areas like Terry Hills had blackouts of internet connection for days. So there were still struggles.
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting you mentioned that the books were mailed out. And so there's still a fairly strong culture of handwriting and paper-based activities and worksheets and things like that, even though it's a one-to-one school. Are you seeing a shift there to more of a digital solutions, or is it still pretty set in those traditional formats?
Like I mentioned about, we do the fine art thing and then we can go to our mouse and use the brush in Photoshop. I really like to start off the creative process with scribbles, which is, you could do that on a screen. You could, you know, just trackpad that in OneNote or whatever you want to use. But for me to be able to pick up a pencil and start sketching something fast on a piece of paper and let my imagination just flop out onto the page, that's been developed as an artist myself, and it's how I try and keep the kids in touch with the tactile so that they can have success when it comes to the digital.
Sorry, Rebecca, are you finding that's the case with other subject areas too, sort of thinking outside of art and so on? Are you finding that there's still an approach where it's still handwriting, it's still paper-based, or is there a transition more to the digital these days across the board throughout the school?
Across the board, I'd say because we have each student with their own device, we have a really strong digital focus here. However, I do know that Science sent out a bag full of the different equipment that they needed for science during COVID as well. And they were these big white bags that everyone got mailed. So I can see that Science was also sending out pages of equipment to use during that time. And until the HSC is fully digital, we still need to be teaching our kids how to handwrite. And it's a struggle for some of them. And for us to read their writing is also a bit of a struggle sometimes. So we're still trying to keep up that hand dexterity, not losing it completely to the keyboard.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the reality of the world we are living in at the moment. Rebecca, yes. Tell us about creativity in general. What does creativity in education mean to you?
Yeah. I thought about this long and hard, and I'm up to about week 10 at the moment of my own professional creative journey, which I started just before lockdown. And I've come to really understand how important creativity is to each individual so that they stay authentic. And I've got a couple of quotes on the back wall in the room here. Picasso said, "Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once we grow up." And so I'm a real strong advocate of people still being able to play. You know, a lot of the Adobe products really allow us to play, which is so important to that inner artist, which is the child that we always were and can still have as adults now. And I've got another quote up back there, Albert Einstein, "Imagination is more important than knowledge." And so I love how the only thing that limits me is my imagination, and same for the students. And the Adobe products, especially Photoshop, which is probably my favorite, it doesn't tell me what to create. It just gives me all the tools to create whatever my imagination can come up with. And while I do teach that structure of activities so that I can make sure that the students learn about each of the tools, I then give them open slather and they can go and find whatever style is their own and really nurture that inner creativity. And you see it, they don't want to leave the classroom at the end of the lesson. I'm like, "You have to go now." And they're like, "No, I just nearly finished." And you can see that there's such a joy that is coming through in their work and how happy they are when they have a successful artwork at the end. So I think creativity is extremely important so we don't all end up being boring adults. I think it's really important that we keep a hold of the authentic inner child, who is that original artist that we all were as a kid.
That's so true, Rebecca, and great words of wisdom there. And of course, as an art teacher, being creative and teaching creativity is almost a natural part of the process. What's the general sense of the importance of creativity throughout the school in other curriculum areas?
Yeah, so when you're looking at STEM and you add the A, which is the artistic part, you get to STEAM, which is great. So we have that ability to work different faculties using all that they offer, but also the creative thinking process and the play side that the visual arts and even the design teachers. And feel that in this school, creativity is encouraged. And if you can bring that spark of your own original idea to a project and not just cookie cut things that have been done before, it is really well received, it's encouraged, and it's rewarded as well. And I want to be a part of a place of education like that.
Oh, that's wonderful. And every time I've been to your school, I've just been, in a sense, overwhelmed with the creative nature of the architecture of the buildings, and it seems to immerse the school in a sense of creativity. And it's always a pleasure to visit your school, and it's lovely to hear your stories. The last question is all about your favorite Adobe apps. Now, you've mentioned Photoshop 350,000 times already during this interview, so we kind of know what the answer is going to be. So tell us about what you do with Photoshop. Tell us about what's going on behind you there.
Sure. So today we worked on Andy Warhol's Campbell Soup Cans. His originals are all in red. So each student has already created their red version and they've changed the name, as you can see mine's still in that red color there, to something that's creative and quirky, and they might use their own name to label the soup can. And then today's lesson was about changing the color and adding some images search online to make our soup cans a little bit more interesting is it a good time to show you the whiteboards and what the kids write down before they get to this?
Yeah, go for it. Did you have another app that you wanted to talk about, or is it all about Photoshop for you?
It's not all about Photoshop because I am growing in my filmmaking as well. And I do want to give a little bit of a plug to one of my amazing creative friends who recently created a music video for me and my music using all Premiere Pro. So he was thinking about adding After Effects, but ended up just keeping it simple with Premiere Pro because he was able to, which was fantastic. So I'm learning how to use Premiere Pro even more, just sitting alongside him and editing together. I would like to be able to use that for making my own music videos. And I have mentioned to you before that I'm also learning to fly. So when I'm up in the air, you get these incredible views of Warragamba Dam, for example. And my first flight was out from Bankstown over the Northern Beaches. And then we turned left and went up along Palm Beach and back inland. The views from up there are spectacular, and not everyone gets to see them. You know, not everyone can fly. And I'd love to be able to capture that footage on GoPros or whatever devices, and then be able to make some really inspirational short videos, either encouraging people to fly or just, hey, this is the view from up here, want to share it with you. And Premiere Pro seems to be the way to go. Although I do also, I have found new love for Premiere Rush. It's like the mini me version of Premiere Pro. It's just a little bit faster and I can do it on my phone or my iPad easily. So maybe I'll just take you for a little tour around my classroom, show you the boards that leads to this. And again, what you were saying before is totally correct, because we do create these booklets that the kids are filling in the steps about how to get to each of these activities. And I scribble like crazy on these boards behind me, and they write it all down. So here's the steps here about how to create the red soup can. And then I've got on the wall here, you've got my photography box there. I've actually got an example there from previous year group. It looks like Andy Warhol's work, which is quite great. And then to get to the different color, I've gone to the other board here and added in, okay, this is how we're going to change the colors of our soup cans now. So, and then, you know, that board is right next to a painting that I've just finished with the same year group. So the whole room is like this amazing place where you've got timeline of the history of art, you've got artworks of kids all the way around, and then we've got these amazing back cupboards. I'm covering these whiteboards with quotes to inspire the kids. And in here you've got all the goodies, you know, the paints, the papers, the textures, and beautiful artworks by the students, canvas racks for the kids who want to get canvases, still life works. So all of these things are just surrounding the students in my room. And I hope that they're encouraging them and inspiring them to just get creative. And I've been telling them all lately, I'm not interested in perfection. I'm interested in play and progress. So just get started. And that, I think, helps them to not feel like they're going to make a mistake. Because another one of the quotes on the back is, to live a creative life, we must lose our fear of being wrong. And that's by Joseph Chilton Pierce. So true. And that way the kids don't get blocked. They are welcome. You know what? Mistakes are welcome here. And I think that's a really fertile ground for creativity to thrive.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. I mean, there's so much wisdom in those quotes. And now that you're learning to become a pilot, thank you for giving us a fly around your classroom. That was impressive. And all the very best with your music as well. I have had the pleasure of seeing some of your clips in the past. I haven't seen anything in recent months, so I'm looking forward to getting a link or two.
I will share that with you.
That'd be terrific. And Rebecca, thank you so much for your time. Was there anything else you wanted to share before we wind things up?
just what I said before about Adobe products, I want to say thank you back to Adobe, because there really isn't anything quite like you guys. And like I said, the imagination is all that limits me. And your products don't tell me what to make. They just give me all the tools to make whatever is in here. And I'm really grateful. So thank you.
What a great way to finish the interview, Rebecca. That's terrific. Thanks again for your time. And I look forward to catching up with you face to face when I'm in Sydney next. Hopefully it won't be too far away. All the very best. See you later.
Thank you.